just quickly mention, if you're coming to Theosophy Hall, we're fragrance free due to those with sensitivities. And since the pandemic and onward, we are on Zoom hybrid meetings 2 a week. But anyway, we just want to let you know that in the ULT declaration, we maintain anonymity and offer no crosstalk or side issues of personal anecdotes. Please, participants, speak directly to the chairperson when called upon. These traditions are designed to welcome all to the study of the philosophy of theosophy without the distractions of any social differentiations or personal attributes. Let us all work to maintain these declared traditions. And we will now cede to the chairperson.
Good morning. Welcome to the Philadelphia branch of the United Lodge of Theosophists. First, let's start with a few announcements. We stand literally at the cusp between the ending winter season and the beginning summer season. So as we come to the end of June, we are finishing this morning a theme for the month entitled Practical Theosophy. And this morning we will enjoy a short talk and ample time for Q&A on the assigned topic of the formation of the nucleus of universal brotherhood. As this morning, Theosophy Hall, 1917 Walnut Street, opened up at 10:30 this morning, and promptly at 11, this hybrid Zoom and in-person meeting began and will last for an hour. That will go on through the month of July on Sundays. On Wednesdays, every Wednesday from June, July, August, and September, there's going to be a study class offered that will also be hybrid. Theosophy Hall will open up at 6:15 and will remain open until shortly before the 7:30 meeting starts. From 6:15 to 7:15 or so, you'll be able to use the reference library to chat with other students about impending assignments, to look at the literature on the book table. But every Wednesday night throughout the course of the next few months, there will be a 7:30 presentation of some aspect of the Bhagavad Gita. In Philadelphia, we use the straight line rendition that was written by William Q. Judge in the late 1800s. And this coming Wednesday night, the last Wednesday in June, we'll be looking at the Sankhya doctrine, and it's pages 11 to 15 that will be under discussion. You'll also be able to hear the fundamentals. Now, having said that, this coming Friday night is the last of the winter series of roundtable discussions. During the winter session, we've enjoyed Zoom-only meetings on Friday nights from 6:30 to 7:30, addressing some topic for discussion on straight-line theosophical issues. This coming Friday night, which would be June 30th, the last of our winter Fridays, there will be a special presentation as it's the last Friday of the month. And again, those Friday night roundtable meetings will be disbanded for the summer months and will begin again in early October. The program for Sundays, starting in July, and July 2nd will be the first of these presentations. That's 1 week from today. The theme for July will be historical traces of the theosophical movement. And the topic for July 2nd will be ancient landmarks. There will be a panel discussion. And again, it is a hybrid meeting next Sunday. Building opens at 10:30. Meeting starts promptly at Zoom and in the building at 11. So all of those activities during the winter and the summer sessions are supported by voluntary contributions of time, service, study, an association of free thinking students who come together in order to keep the philosophy of theosophy alive before the public mind and heart, to energize, if you will, the theosophical movement as best we can in Philadelphia. We're one of 24 some meeting places around the world, many of which are on Zoom presentations or Skype presentations. It's easy to attend a variety of locations. If you understand the language, you'll be home free to attend. But no matter where in the world these activities are produced, they all hone on a very sweet, simple declaration of intent. So here's our rendition of the United Lodge of Theosophists Declaration. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. So without further ado, we will finish up our consideration of practical theosophy with a presentation of a talk entitled Formation of the Nucleus of Universal Brotherhood.
There are three objects that are the driving force behind the theosophical movement, and they are as follows. To form the nucleus of a universal brotherhood of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, color, or caste. These, of course, are the separative distinctions most universally made in the world. Number two, the study of ancient and modern religions, philosophies, and sciences, and the demonstration of the importance of such study. This object is necessary in order to detect the vital principles common to all of them, and thus do away with sectarianism and exclusiveness. The third object is the investigation of the unexplained laws of nature and the psychic powers latent in man. This object is needed to destroy the ideas of special creation and miracles. By the recognition of the reign of law in everything and in every circumstance, and the recovery of the spiritual and psychical knowledge and powers of the immortal ego. Obviously, all three are extremely important in the larger picture and scope of theosophy. But we today are going to focus on the first object only, because race, creed, sex, caste, color are by far the more important separative distinctions most universally made in the world. When the first object was initially expressed in 1875, the times were very different from now. If we think of the context of the time in which these ideas were made, universal brotherhood was a revolutionary concept. In 1875, when the society was founded in New York City, it was just 10 years after the abolition of slavery in the United States. 10 years earlier, the law of the land allowed you to buy another person of African descent and treat them like any piece of property, no different from a horse or a cow or a pig. It was a challenging time in which to introduce an idea that said, regardless of race and religion, there is a human universal brotherhood. Part of the role of the introduction of theosophy and the beginning of the theosophical movement was to prepare the ground for future development. H.P. Blavatsky was very clear that the wisdom she came to share could not possibly be understood during her lifetime. In fact, she said that it would not be for another 100 years until the ideas could begin to be intelligently discussed. Some advancement in human knowledge and consciousness would be required. Someone had to plant seeds for this future growth, and this was the role that HPB was destined to play. Now, and finally, it is the law in countries around the world that people cannot be discriminated against for race, religion, caste, and so on. However, to take root, this first object must first be practiced. Practicing brotherhood in thought, word, and deed functions in three ways: to solve the problem of finding happiness, peace, and security in the world. First, where there is chaos and discord in the world, brotherhood restores harmony and balance. Second, where disassociation and separateness prevail, brotherhood inspires association and unity. Third, where antagonism, ill will, intolerance, hatred, antipathy reign in the world or in the heart, brotherhood subdues them with benevolence. In order for brotherhood to have its restorative, inspiring, and subduing force, it must be focused and work through a vehicle. That is the function of a nucleus. The nucleus is a vehicle for the manifestation of brotherhood as a potent force in nature in three ways. The nucleus provides the center, the core, and the basis for the influence of force. As a center, it attracts that which lies on the periphery, on the exterior or outer edge, like the atomic nucleus is the center of a cloud of electrons. The nucleus of universal brotherhood attracts individuals of different nations, races, creeds, and conditions to a center of force whose power of coherence is a similarity of aim, purpose, and principles. As a core of essence, it influences and guides the whole, like the nucleus of a plant or animal cell. A nucleus of universal brotherhood guides the theosophical movement as a whole through the influence of a fundamental principle, which is its essence, universal unity based on the spiritual identity of all beings. Each one of us is a nucleus, and together by joining forces in the right spirit, we form a nucleus of universal brotherhood, and the spirit will be there. The more we join, the stronger the force in the world. Together, we can be the inspirational focal point for the benefit of humanity. In this way, a relatively small association of human beings can influence the progress of all humanity. As a basis, a nucleus functions as the model, like the germ cell of a plant or animal, which contains the latent possibility or potentiality for all the future generations of that species. A nucleus of universal brotherhood provides the basis for hope, possibility, and potentiality for the brotherhood of the future generations of humanity. Healing functions to mend injury, ameliorate suffering, regenerate that which is weakened, and regenerate that which is decayed. Healing takes place when the latent potential within becomes an active potency without. Healing is a natural force that is effective only when it moves from within outwards. The body is not healed from without. All healers, trained or natural, know how to facilitate the healing process. Those who want to assist the healing of humanity have to begin from within by removing the ideas, perspectives, and motives that are responsible for most of our ills and suffering. The healing force of any substance lies within the essence, essential nature. In the lower kingdoms of nature, the healing force lies within the essence common to all the kingdoms. In the human kingdom, the healing force also comes from the spiritual nature within when appropriately directed by the mind. Remove the ideas that distort imagination and inflame fears, and the inner healing force is released, and half, if not two-thirds, of the illnesses will be ameliorated. The essential healing force of theosophy is the force of spiritual ideas in action, released through study, application, and work. Spirit and spiritual ideas are centrifugal and centripetal, repulsive and attractive in nature. They repel ignorance, prejudice, dogmatism, and selfishness, like the essences of thyme, oregano, and rosemary repel bugs. And they attract wisdom, tolerance, open-mindedness, and altruism, like the essences of rose, jasmine, and lavender attract these. In closing, brotherhood as an idea is powerful. Brotherhood as an experience is profoundly different from any mere idea. due to the force of habit during this and previous lives, we associate understanding and wisdom with the lesser knowledge in many ways. We are spiritually immature, and our appreciation of the difference is still undeveloped. This deeper appreciation that moves us from idea to experience is the direction in which the first object points. So once again, today's topic is the formation of the nucleus of universal brotherhood.
So here we stand. The winter season is behind us. The seeds of the winter classes have been sown, and a growth and rest period is upon us. And our last topic for practical theosophy is the formation of the nucleus of universal brotherhood. I'm sure you came to the session this morning with your own observations on the subject matter. Theosophy Hall.
So it's interesting that healing begins within, not from without. Is that what was said? And, there's different modalities of healing, which are, we guess, perhaps superficial or temporary, or even maybe not desirable to partake in. Is it true that real healing begins from within?
The quote from the reading this morning was, "The healing force of any substance lies within its essential nature. In the lower kingdoms of nature, the healing force lies within the life essence common to all the kingdoms. And in the human kingdom, the healing force also comes from the spiritual nature when appropriately directed by the mind." So in terms of solving life's problems, healing wrongs that we may observe, healing prior causes that may be very destructive, all of the force, all of the essence of what we need in the way of wisdom and intuitive or insightful motivation for action lies within the soul that is incarnate in the physical frame. So we know that in the world of medicine, there are practices where symptoms can be alleviated, but that doesn't mean that the underlying disease is cured. It's just that the symptoms are relieved. So as we see in the physical body, an immune system, vehicles for healing, curative powers that can be directed by mind and heart. So too, we can apply that information to the world that we see around us. Was there a follow-up, Theosophy Hall?
There's another person from Theosophy Hall that has her hand up. So I don't know if we want to put them in the queue. It's up to you, Chairperson.
Well, SL, do you have a comment on this same subject? Okay, let's start with SL and then we'll go to back to Theosophy.
Sure, okay.
Thank you.
So to follow up on that thought there, we might look at the symptoms of a lack of universal brotherhood in the world being violent crimes of hatred, prejudicial laws, restrictive practices based on differences of race, creed, sex, condition, caste, color. But that's like a medicine that just treats the surface symptoms. It doesn't really cure the problem. It just maybe controls it. Real healing or a real lasting brotherhood has to begin within the thought and feeling. Temporary measures such as, you know, laws enforcements may stop the surface expression, but they can't get rid of the underlying prejudice and hatred in themselves. That has to be an evolution of consciousness and understanding.
Historically, we saw that with the breakup of the old USSR. The minute that the constrictions of different dictators was disbanded, what had been under control came explosively bubbling up to the surface in a very sad and sorrowful way. And that's only one example that we can think of at the moment. And again, the true curative basis is that formation of a steady fundamental basis of universal spiritual oneness. And if everything else is based on that correct premise, and we begin to turn all aspects of the energies of our incarnation toward a realization of that, then we've got a true curative process that we can offer to all degrees of manifestation. Now, Theosophy Hall, you have another individual with a...
Well, we have two individuals. Go ahead.
Mine is not a follow-up, is that okay?
It's not a follow-up. Should we continue with this thread?
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yes, it's interesting that today's topic is on universal brotherhood, considering we just celebrated ULT Day regarding the initiation of ULT. And last night there was a special program that was presented from one of the other lodges regarding universal brotherhood and the connection between all the lodges. So it's like an uplift in regards to what we would hope would be a continuing of the acknowledgement of the unity of all, and to keep the idea of universal brotherhood, and knowing that we're all spiritual beings, and the acknowledgement that our neighbor is a spiritual being, and that they are going through their own karmic journey as well.
So the observation that the United Lodge of Theosophists, with its varied centers around the world and even individual study groups beyond those official centers, is based on these ideas of this core value of universal brotherhood, a true nature of self. And therefore, when you think back to the declaration that we heard just a little bit before at the top of the meeting, the loyalty of those free thinkers that aspire to associate themselves with the work of promulgating the philosophy are actually focused on, they're actually dedicated to a broader theosophical movement, an all-inclusive cyclical development of what it's like to bring these philosophical truths into the world, not only to publicize them, but then to make the efforts of applying them and honing all activities just to the principles, not to personalities, not to organization and frou-frou politics or, you know, formalities of bureaucracy, but no, just very simply, the binding essence is that which is what within the true nature of self, the universality, the equality of that self, and then holding the similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, that's the union. And so there we see no affiliation with a building, a temporary association, a temporary organization of any kind. The affiliation is eternal. Theosophy Hall, I don't know if you've got a follow-up or there's a different...
There's another hand here.
Our observation was, when we're talking about healing, and there's a certain internal healing that has to happen as regards people's outlook on brotherhood. We recall in a couple of different areas of the writings, there's a comparison sometimes between Eastern and Western psychology, and that Eastern psychology addresses dissonance in internal dissonance or emotional problems with one's own morality. And when they address that, when we address our own morality, what we're really doing is recognizing karma and living in a way that is immoral, and setting karmic causes up in that way is accepting the false idea, the heresy of separation. So once we realize that everything we do and think does affect the world, we're setting different karmic causes in motion. And our understanding is that, that's the start of the internal healing process.
Mm-hmm. The entire emphasis on personal responsibility, the entire emphasis of turning within for intuitive discernment of what is ethical, what is not ethical, which motives are pure, which motives, excuse me, are mixed. The entire process of trying to remain calm and concentrated in the face of any circumstance, so that we can try to figure out in the moment how best to help, how best to soothe, how best to invite the universality of spirit that will bring all conflict to an end, because it's cured, not because it's symptomatically squashed. This is tremendously important. And as the speaker just referred to, the whole notion of karma and reincarnation, the whole process of enfoldment going on across endless cycles of manifestation, brings a great soothing comfort that if there is a oneness in the moment, an affiliation with universality, altruism, compassion, pure love, the true identification of each to the all, a sustained namaste moment, if you will. That psychology, that eternal moment, then expanded across eons of cycles and incarnations, can bring everlasting in elevation, shall we say, to the efforts of all thinkers in all formats. And isn't that process of turning within, looking for the central core of an ethically divine spiritual way to live, trying to heed the voice of such a force, isn't that the beginning, the formation of a nucleus, centering within? But then it leads us to a concern. What's the difference between a nucleus and the nucleus? Theosophy Hall, there was a hand.
It's interesting that these terms, these Eastern terms, have been filtering into our language, and they're, for instance, karma is, it may not be fully understood, but the basic concept is ubiquitous now. We knew an older student who said, oh, no, it's not that well known, but she started studying the philosophy in 1935. And since then, since almost 90 years has come about, and now we could say, well, karma if it's well understood or not well understood, it's still known. But there's another word, another term that has gained wide acceptance, and that is the whole concept of namaste. And it's wonderful. It's a wonderful, you know, the spirit in me recognizes the spirit in you. Could we talk a little bit about the namaste concept? Because it certainly has to do with universal brotherhood, we think.
Oh, it does. It's a lovely greeting and a statement of adieu. And you're right, the spirit within me recognizes the spirit within you. The implication is when the vibrations are correct, we are at one. And that essence, that eternal ancient teaching, certainly has come into the Western world from the Eastern. And the talk this morning reminded us that these ideas were brought into the Western world during the Reconstruction at the end of the Civil War, in the midst of struggles, what to do with the indigenous populations of Native Americans, how to reincorporate the newly emancipated humans who had been in bondage for generations. But these ideas also needed to percolate, they needed to rise up in Asia, in Europe, where the odious chains or burdens of imperialism and colonialism had squashed indigenous and ancient teachings. But the namaste concept survived. And why has it survived? It has survived, it is blooming, it's coming to fruition because it's symptomatic. It's a bloom, in essence, of the greater theosophical movement, that these are eternal, ancient teachings and concepts that are true, and therefore, they're everlasting. They may be overridden from time to time with the most odious of motivations and power-seeking forces among humans, but they will rise again because they're impressed, they're impacted within the very nature of what it is to be human. A chat just came in. Do we incarnate in the same race, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime? Interesting question, because it raises the entire issue of how does the theosophical concept of race differ from the anthropological or social concept of race. In terms of the philosophy, the race, the human race, is that incredible composite, if you will, that collective of all souls moving in evolutionary process from an emergence from the absolute and the most ethereal manifestation through the course of Manvantaras, seven in number, in which different aspects or different powers are developed, again, among this whole, this unity. And therefore, eventually at the end of a sevening, this great force of spirit manifesting as human state will re-emerge back into an absolute, unimaginable state of purity, of oneness, of homogeneity. What sometimes comes to mind is the mercury, the liquid metal or element that unfortunately my dad brought home from work and let us play with as children. But the observation of how this undulating mass of liquid moving around, kind of having a force of its own, but little drops would emerge seamlessly without effort, and then be attracted back into the mass again without effort, without leaving any scarring. It's similar probably to a molecule of water that emerges from a gaseous state and is back into a liquid form for a little while, may even wind up frozen in a solid ice only to reemerge again and go back through the entire cycle. So that's theosophical race, a oneness of soul, spirit, moving in seven different ways across many, many, many incarnations. And therefore, the odious definitions of race that have emerged, especially with, frankly, with the slavery development in the Western Hemisphere, those odious concepts of somehow the beauty of the array of the human form somehow became this hierarchy of power from white to light to dark. And so as we as soul incarnate from life to life to life, we remain at one with the collective, the theosophical notion of race, and we can across incarnations and will, and no matter probably have for 18 million years, assumed various forms, male, female, other. All sorts of different nationalities, all sorts of different physical presentations. But the heart light that shines from the eye is one and the same. It is of that one theosophic notion of race and is not to be in any way, shape, or form perverted by what we may have learned in our societies about the differences of racial development. Theosophy Hall.
There, we found it. Sometimes that cursor is hard to find.
Technology is a lot of fun.
Well, yeah, that's a whole other thing.
But we needed the group of five-year-olds.
Okay. Right. They know, for sure. Interesting that not the United Lodge of Theosophists, because we say to form the nucleus of a universal brotherhood. There are several other theosophical organizations, which we won't name because it's, we just don't do that, but in their writings, they say to form a nucleus of the universal brotherhood. And we think there's a huge distinction and that's not really what we're all about. Do we care to discuss this, or is this, should we just move on to something else? Does it matter?
It's an interesting thing because the words that we use contain our ideas, don't they?
Yes.
So that how we use words and how therefore we limit our ideas or expand our ideas becomes very, very important. If we revisit the first object that was shared this morning to form the nucleus of a universal brotherhood of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, caste, or color, that statement, that object was one that was based on the emphasis of the theosophic movement. And even in our little periodical guide, you'll see that object appearing as the first of three objects of the theosophical movement. And the notion of the nucleus of universal brotherhood, that there is oneness. the array of what we seem to perceive is something different. Manifestation is something different. But that nucleus, that oneness, is what we begin to aspire toward. Now, we may wind up in a continuum, probably because we are soul working through karma and incarnations galore, where we're gradually fine-tuning and gradually redefining our concept of words. So we may wind up realizing that we've been very selfish in certain aspects of this incarnation. We begin to work on honing that, getting rid of flaws and limitations, trying to become more and more self-centered on spirit and soul for proper motive. So less selfish, more self-centered, in a gradual evolutionary stream, in a return to this, the nucleus of universal brotherhood. So we may start out maybe a nucleus, trying to see ourselves as best we can at one with everyone else, still personalized, still finite, still conditioned, and gradually hone that meaning away from that nucleus, this nucleus, your nucleus, my nucleus, back to the nucleus. Theosophy Hall?
So there are many nuclei of brotherhoods, we could say, but it's not universal, we think. That's the whole point, is we are forming the nucleus of one universal brotherhood. If it's limited to strictly men or strictly people of a certain persuasion or religion or interest group, they can be very brotherly to one another, but yet it's limited. We just think it's a contradiction to say form a nucleus of the universal brotherhood, because universal brotherhood doesn't exist yet. It's something that's nascent and developing. So we are trying to form the nucleus of a truly universal brotherhood, are we not?
Well, if we have the proposition that everything in manifestation, every degree of intelligence, is an emanation from the absolute, the all-inclusive, all-encompassing, limitless absolute, then universal brotherhood is already a fact in nature. It's an eternal truth and reality. What's going on is that in the human state, because of past thinking and actions and reactions, some of those concepts are twisted or veiled or limited. And we shudder to think every time we hear someone in the current society talking about my tribe versus your tribe, where they've taken this sense of, at some spiritual level, they understand belonging and oneness and caring and unity, but they've limited it. They've compacted it in their use of idea and word. And so for the truth to be unveiled, it will take an ongoing effort of folks around the world. And again, as our declaration says, it doesn't matter about the form. Our declaration for United Lodge of Theosophists says, it regards as Theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And so key becomes this introspective effort to see the heart of the other. Perhaps there is an association or an organization or something that we find, whoa, that's separatist, that's not ethical. But if we try to see into the heart of the souls promoting that, we may be delightfully aware that within a limited degree of understanding, they're actually operating on their own concept of a brotherhood of unity. And so in that way, we become more inclusive. We look beyond the ugliness of the actions or the activities or the creed, whatever it is, and we look into the heart of our fellow humans so that we can communicate with them one to one, one as we truly are. SL, and then back to Theosophy Hall.
The point was brought out is how we use words reflects what we think about them. And the term a nucleus may mean to some people a separate association or separateness, but it also can stand, for independent devotion, or the idea is brought out in HPB's article, each member a center, each individual, and therefore each association of individuals can be an independent nucleus of universal brotherhood, bound together by the larger concept on the inner plane. So it really depends how you use the words. And we did, to give an example of that, Robert Crosby wrote in his important article to all open-minded theosophists, and he quotes here, quote, to form a nucleus of universal brotherhood without any distinction whatsoever was and is the key to the situation. So just to point, it really depends on how we use the words, and not to get too dogmatic, but to understand the meaning behind it, really.
Yeah, and to invite dialogue for the meaning behind it, because we may slip from one form to another, and not realize that two different folks are actually talking about the same process and holding the same truth dear. So part of discernment, part of intuition, is to look beyond the formation of words into spiritual symbols, and hold those as the binding force in the effort to elevate all of humanity, all of manifestation. So back to Theosophy Hall.
So then that brings back that idea. If we recognize the truth of the fundamental propositions and realize and accept and prove to ourselves that we each and all are identical with the universal oversoul in essence, and therefore are identical with each other. And therein is the brotherhood, therein is the unity on that plane. Then when we talk about to form a nucleus of universal brotherhood, or when we talk about to form the nucleus of universal brotherhood, essentially we're saying is to give it expression on this plane in which we operate. Emphasis being universal, everybody, rather than a or the.
What came to mind during that comment is the analogy of the white light that is one and pure, passing through a prism of the expression of manifestation to emerge into an array of seven different colors, each with nuance and tone and brightness, and then eventually in a kaleidoscope of how these colors can interact. It's the same process. It's the same essence of the former comment. So there's a oneness, and then there's the manifestation and the diversity of the application of that oneness. SL?
Well, if a single pronoun or word such as a or the can cause so much difference, imagine what all the different creeds in the world, the kind of distinction there. So it says the true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. And we think a meditation or reflection on that shows that the real brotherhood has to be in the brotherhood of ideas or truth, eternal truth that underlies all systems of thought.
Yeah, the true oneness is that namaste moment of we appear to be very different. Oh, I see what your motive is. I appreciate what your motive is. I get it. There may be a different way to express that motive and work with that motive. So instead of division and separateness and fire and pain and violence, we can hold on, calm down, go slow, listen, and try to find the commonalities of the heart, the insights of the soul, and then play to that center of the other individual in our lives. And at the same time, interpret our own reactions between the response to the heartfelt symbolism of the other soul versus the outer expressions that we might find different or confusing or even repugnant. Yosefi Hall?
So very succinctly, universal brotherhood is a fact in nature, yet not all have realized that fact yet. And we're working towards that truer realization of the self and that namaste, that we're all on the same realization with all the kingdoms, not just the human kingdom. It's everything is one whole. It's all is one, really. And of course, that sin of separateness is ignorance, isn't it, really? It's just plain ignorance of the fact that really does exist.
It's almost the whole notion of separateness in the world of human development is so conditioned, it's crippling in some folks. You know, think for a minute about the way that an infant, a human infant, gradually evolves and expands their degree of perception. You know, upon birth, they can smell their human mother. They can hear a voice that has been familiar for 9 months already. They can't see very well. Everything's upside down. And for a very, very, very long time, that little form does not allow the soul to differentiate between you and me. There's a oneness between the caretaker and the infant, a complete and absolute bond. And then we gradually see through the months of toddling where the concept of me, me, me eventually is transformed into I. But we can see that the child that is raised in an environment where they can naturally begin to expand their perception. Yes, there's the security and safety of this human being in these arms, but I also sense in the eyes and the tone of the voice and the action of all these other humans, the same kind of comfort and at oneness. The child that's allowed an array of companions and loving family members and experiences that expand their world beyond just the one in their own home, that child is most karmically fortunate because they have an easier time of seeing the oneness in the array. They're more apt to break the conditioning, the illusion of separateness, and be open-hearted and open-minded to be inclusive and all-encompassing. We only have about a minute left, so let's end this this winter session's consideration with a quote from an article by Robert Crosby. This is an article entitled Theosophy in Daily Life, and it's the last paragraph, the beginning of the last paragraph of that article. Theosophy is the only philosophy that can be used in every direction in daily life. It can be used in all directions, high or low, because that use comes from an understanding of the spirit itself, from acting for that self and as that self. For the self acts only through the creatures, acting for and as that self in every direction. All else flows into line. And so may we all line up, fine-tune ourselves, and become at one with the formation of the nucleus of universal brotherhood. So this Wednesday night coming up, we will have the beginning of the study of the Bhagavad Gita with a consideration of the Sankhya doctrine. And this coming Friday night, we will have the last presentation of the Winter's Roundtable, which again will resume in October. Have a wonderful day.